Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Legal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the B-grade action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax, with the loves of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Legal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
Welcome, folks, to episode number 240. Are we up to 45 yet? We must be. 240-something of the Legal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and here tonight we continue hashtag Keanu-thon. Here, after, of course, covering one of the big ones, Speed, in the last episode, we're going to be looking at Chain Reaction, one we did a little while ago, Rachel Weisz and, of course, Morgan Freeman. This was one that was done in the late 90s, and it was definitely something a little bit different for Keanu. You know, it was him moving into more of a mainstream sort of area. You know, we're talking about a movie, I think, in 1996, after, you know, he'd be done Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, had done a number of comedies over the years, and obviously he was part of that new group of teenage sensation at the time that really, I think, put people, you know, into theatres just because he was cool. And he was a very, very, at that time, up-and-coming artist and one that, you know, really had, I think, the whole world at his, you know, at his knees, ready to go. This was something completely new. And for us as fans and, of course, as watchers of cinema, we're at the start of something that would only continue in things like The Matrix and, you know, many other films to come. And certainly one of our favourites today with, of course, all the different stuff he's doing now, obviously more Matrix films, which have just been announced recently. And, of course, the John Wick series, which is just going gangbusters, folks. It's huge. The big one is that Keanu now wants to do another Constantine film. Obviously, that is the Vertigo DC Comics character, which is part of the more horror-style part of the franchise. And, of course, that's part of the Hellblazer, which is huge. And Constantine is obviously one that I think is a very good character. And as far as Keanu's, it was something a little bit different than the action stuff he'd done, the comedy stuff he'd done. And, you know, it may not be exactly like the comic books, which is, again, the look and everything was the thing that people always said, oh, it's not, you're saying, me, whinge, Karen. Crikey. But think about it. What we've got here is, you know, his interpretation. We had Gavin Rossdale from the rock band Bush in it. Peter Stormare, who we'd later see, and of course, John Wick, you know, he killed a guy with a fucking pencil, that sort of shit, you know, and it's great. It's fantastic. And I like it. You know, I do like that sort of, you know, magic supernatural sort of universe, which is, you know, also touching on, you know, dark, if not in some ways, you know, witchery and satanic sort of stuff as well with the devil. And, you know, it's part of what that sort of comic always was about. But the big one was the Keanu didn't dye his hair or bleach it, in this case, blonde like the character. But we did get a TV character, which I never watched. I never actually watched that TV show that came out, which had the character in it later, which, you know, was, I think, from the fans of the what was in the comic books, was a lot more popular. All right. So anyway, tonight we're talking about Chain Reaction. And, you know, quite a good cast, as we mentioned. Obviously, we've got some great people in it. We've got Keanu Reeves, Morgan Freeman, Rachel Weisz from the Mummy franchise, Brian Cox, yes, Uncle Argyle. We've got Zima from Rapid Fire. We've also got Kevin Dunn, Joanna Cassidy from Blade Runner, and one of the big ones, Fred Ward, folks, from Uncommon Valor. And, of course, he is the Destroyer. Yes, folks. Huge. Director was, of course, the director of Under Siege, the one and only Andrew Davis. And that's what we're talking about today. We'll talk a little bit about it. It's not one that gets a huge vote when it comes to its review and everything like that. But I thought this would be a nice one to sort of look at where he was at the time before he did Devil's Advocate, became Thomas Anderson. Dude, I like computers, man. Like, come on. Like, computers, dude. You know, because they like compute, man. So obviously a little bit different. And this was only about a year or two difference before he came out here to Australia and did Dogstar. I like dogs, man. Dogstar. Yeah, Dogstar. It's cool, man. All right, let's get into this bad boy. As we do, of course, we'll let you know you can catch this show and many others like it at fpnet.poppy.com. Of course, that is the Fandom Podcast Network, yes. And you'll find, of course, Bloody Kings of Highlander podcast over the Culture Clash. Look at the current pop culture. You'll also find, what else will you find, folks? Everything from Couch Potato Theater, of course, looking back at the old days. Bit of a flashback. Well, Little Mullet itself, you're going to find a lot of flashbacks that we've been putting out lately. Thanks to, of course, our listeners going, have you ever a couple of this little movie? Or did you do this movie? Did you review this one? Well, guess what, folks? We probably have. We've been around for about 6 years now. And yes, we have done a lot of those in the past. So there you go. There's a lot to be found. And you can find that, of course, on the Facebook page. That is, of course, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And, of course, many other places like Snapchat and TikTok and yeah, we're TikToking all over the place, folks. All right, let's get into it. It is a 1996 American science fiction action thriller. Well, pretty much all the movies of the 90s were of some variety of that. It was very popular to do those sorts of thrillers and have that sort of feel, folks, because that's just what they did, didn't they? You know, they were all about thriller and action and having an action star behind it. Directed by Andrew Davis. Obviously, we know Andrew Davis from all the other stuff we just talked about. We'll talk about him a little bit more. Great director and one that brought up people like Chuck Norris and Steven Seagal, man. And it also covers all those actors we just talked about. The plot centers around the invention of a new non-contaminating power source. And it's all based around hydrogen, something that many scientists have actually been talking about recently. And attempts by the U.S. Government themselves to provide and also then prevent the spreading of the technology to other countries, obviously making a monopoly on it. It came out August 2, 1996. So it's a bit of a smart one. It's a clever sort of a movie. So what's the plot all the way about? Here we go. So spoiler warning, guess what? We're going to spoil it for yous. All right, so while working with a team at the University of Chicago and then working around hydrogen to convert it into a clean energy source from water originally, Eddie Kasilevic discovers from the secret a sound frequency that perfectly stabilizes everything, the process, the whole thing. The project from there, celebrate with the team together, and that's with Dr. Paul Shannon, who's leading the project, and Dr. Alistair Barkley, who's the head project manager. And they argue because Alistair wants to basically give the science to the world. But when Paul says, he says, no, we should keep this within the country. After the party, though, the main physicist, Dr. Lily Sinclair, finds that she's unable to actually start her car and get out. So this is where Eddie gets her home by the bus instead. Back in the lab, Alistair, of course, his little assistant, who is Dr. Lu Chen, they're on their computer trying to upload, obviously, to the public, they're discovering their breakthrough. When they go back to the lab on his motorcycle, as it's, of course, Keanu Reeves and Rich Weiss, Eddie hears alarms and tries to go inside to find, and what he finds inside is that all the people inside have been killed. Alistair dead with a plastic bag over his head, and then Chen is missing, not there at all. From there, the hydrogen reactor itself is unstable and is incredibly dangerous. And from here, they have to shut it down, and they have no chance of doing it. It's unable to actually close off. And from there, they escape on motorcycle. And from here, a concealed detonator takes out the whole place. I'm not sure who's done this. Part of the mystery. So from here, they return And, of course, the FBI are at their houses and going through everything, and they question them. Eddie and Lily then see that they are being actually framed for what happened and what was going on. And there's been things planted in their houses as evidence against them. From here, they flee the area and head to an observatory belonging to Maggie McDermott, who's an old friend of Keanu Reeves' character, Eddie's. From there, they contact Paul, but they're caught in the way through. And then, of course, from there, they're able to get away and not be caught. And from here, they're also trying to evade people at the police. And, of course, this is where Paul meets Lyman Earl Collier, a assistant research and this is where they discuss the current events there. Becomes, to his own mind that Lyman and the CIA orchestrated the entire thing. And they're trying to destroy the lab and frame the two, obviously Eddie and the other two, obviously against the crime itself. From here, despite what's going on, Paul and Lyman decide to continue to hunt for them together. And this is where Eddie sends a coded message to Paul to try and meet them. From here, Paul and obviously Eddie meet, reveals his involvement in it to them, but says that Lyman's people, ones who had killed Alistair, capture Lily, and while Eddie barely escapes after that too. From here, they're tracing the identification of the car, and Eddie's tracing them to a place, a secret place called C-Systems Research, where they're forcing Lily and Chen, who'd been taken prisoner, to try and build the same project, but at the same time to try and fix it so it works. So one of the scientists discovers the working reactor, and everyone celebrates. From here, Paul immediately contains basically all the data together and tries to give it to his assistant, Anita, and this is so keep it secret. And, of course, keep him safe. And he sees Eddie at a computer in the company boardroom, demands and release in exchange for making the reactor work. Paul then, of course, agrees Lyman. Lyman's not having it. Lyman's like, yeah, nah. Believes that the process already works. So Eddie sets the reactor to explode while sending proof, really, of course, to the FBI. And hopefully from there, the reactor will work to the internationals. Scientists are aboard. Of course, Lyman then shoots Chen and then locking in Eddie and Lily into, of course, die into the explosion. So there's no evidence of them left. From here, Paul kills Lyman, obviously for going ahead of what they plan to do. And also from there, leaving the body in the incinerated explosion, during his own escape, he deactivates the containment, allowing Eddie and Lily to get out as well. They're attacked by, of course, Lyman's old henchmen. And from here, they also escape the blast wave. From here, Eddie and Lily are met by the FBI and are convinced that they're innocent, taking them to safety. Paul is shown departing the scene by a chauffeured limousine. And, of course, the last scene was him seeing a memo to his secretary, which informs the CIA that nothing's viable. From here, we see the ceaseless disease now imploding into the landscape. So everything's kept and covered. So it's a nice, tight little, thriller for starters. But, you know, it's got that classic stuff with the when it comes to spy work and trying to keep everything tight when it comes to who's really in charge of this thing, what's really happening, what's really going down, which makes it interesting, of course. All right, so who's the cast? You've got Keanu Reeves playing Eddie Kislevic. He's obviously a machinist working on a team from the University of Chicago. He's forced on the run with Dr. Lily, and then someone frames him for the murder of his own boss, Dr. Alistair Barclay. And, of course, the destruction of the facility. Laboratory. He must work to clear their names or they're going to be captured or killed. Morgan Freeman plays, of course, the enigmatic Paul Shannon. He's the leader of the project at the University of Chicago. And it's not clear what his motives are throughout the movie, but he keeps advising Eddie to turn himself in. It's later says that he's the head of the entire thing. Includes Lyman, who tries to have the research team killed. Scene with the agents later in the ending suggests Eddie is actually with the CIA. Rachel Weisz is Lily Sinclair. She's one of the physicists working with Alistair Barkley. She goes on the run with Eddie as well. And, of course, has trying to get away from what is happening inside. The amazing Fred Ward plays Agent Leon Ford. And in charge of the investigation in the to discover the cause of the destruction in the laboratory. And he initially focuses on Eddie, but Lily and Lily, but soon suspects that there's much bigger thing ahead, and of course government organizations possibly involved. Kevin Dunn plays Agent Doyle, Ford's assistant in the investigation. Kevin Dunn's done a lot of these sort of characters, did it in Mark for Death and many others, and obviously he's known for his work in Transformers. Great actor. And this, he helps Ford track down Eddie, Lily, and later, C-Systems. Brian Cox, yes, Uncle Largale, as Lyman Earl Collier, chairman of the C-Systems Research, and, of course, the people behind the conspiracy. And Joanna Cassidy plays Maggie McDermott, an old friend of Eddie's who lives in the observatory in Wisconsin. Eddie and Lily head to a place after the warrant is issued for the arrest. We've got Chelsea Ross as FBI agent Ed Rafferty, Nicholas Rudell as Dr. Alistair Barkley, Zima as Lou Chen, who's the project manager of the Hydrogen Project, Christoph Piazinski as Lucas Srebensky, Eddie Bo Smith Jr. as Dr. Golding. And in addition, there's Michael Shannon and Neil Flynn make appearances in this as a van driver and a police state trooper. All right, so again, something that Andrew Davis did a lot was shoot these sorts of things in and around Chicago. Obviously, it's you know, it's used in a lot of his work. You know, you can look at The Fugitive was one that was done there. U.S. Marshal was done there. I do believe even Above the Law, if I remember right. I'm pretty sure that was done there as well. Obviously, he started out with a lot of those guys. So a lot of the police drama stuff was done in and around that city, and it's great city to use for a lot of those great ones too. So most of it was shot in all locations in around Chicago, Illinois, and also around the University of Chicago, Argonne National Laboratory, and the Museum of Science and Industry. Also the Field Museum of Natural History of Michigan Avenue, and of course the J.R. Thompson Center, and the Summit Yerkes Observatory in Williams Bay, Wisconsin, and Geneva Lake in southern Wisconsin. Also, parts of the U.S. Capitol were shot in Wisconsin State Capitol, Madison, Wisconsin, and Inland Steel Company, which is now known as Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated, and also in East Chicago, Indiana, and at a private place at Barrington Hills, Illinois. Because of the Great Lakes winter and filming take place during the record winter weather, unique challenges were placed on the cast and crew. This is why you see, obviously, been a lot of cold weather gear and all that sort of stuff, too, which is really, really interesting. So how did the film go down? Well, the film is one of, not, let's just say, not one of Keanu's higher praised ones. All right. So Rotten Tomatoes holds it at 18% rating on Rotten Tomatoes based on 33 reviews. Roger Ebert gave the film a 2.5 stars out of 4, saying, by movie's end, I'd seen some great photography and some swell photography, he says, and witnessed some thrilling chase scenes, but when it comes down to understanding the movie, I don't have a clue. The narrative is very complex, but what's on the screen is little more than a generic, narrative-specific guy-chasing stuff. Guy-being-chased stuff, basically. So you've got that. Also, that was from the Houston Chronicle, I believe, yes. And then we've got the next bit from San Francisco Chronicle saying that he felt the film was one of the summer's best movies running, has better acting, better writing, more spectacular chase sequences, and more genuine drama than all of this summer's blockbusters. So, chain reaction and its cast nominated for one award. Keanu Reeves being nominated a Razzie for Worst Actor, which was won by both Tom Arnold and Paulie Shore. Well, I mean, to put him into that degree, I mean, at that stage, he was quite acting the same. And he kind of hasn't changed. But it's what we love about Keanu, you know, it's he plays him. Chain reaction debuted in fourth place on the box office. Behind A Time to Kill, Independence Day, Matilda. Quite a big time for up-and-coming talent at the time, which we consider A-grade now too. Time to Kill, Samuel L. Jackson, and, of course, Matthew McConaughey. All right, all right, all right. Reeves has since expressed regret about Chain Reaction, blaming things like script changes. I mean, his character, he said, originally I was married as a kid, and I did this research. I didn't know what I was researching had this effect. Someone got killed and had these regrets, and I'm trying to stop what I'm doing, but they can't let me, so they're chasing me. And then all of a sudden I turned into this 24-year-old machinist. I turned to Andrew Davis and I said, what happened to the movie I said yes to? What happened to the script? Where did that go? And he said, no problem, I've got something better. So I just had to go with it. So is it accurate scientifically? Well, let's have a look at it. So this is water fuel inventions, basically, okay? This is part of what it is. So part of the film's plot, scientific process, talks about extracting hydrogen from water, then burn the hydrogen to generate power, and leaves only water as a residue after. It's essentially a chemical perpetual motion, and obviously, you know, it's a clean energy source using water. The movie never shows how the hydrogen itself extracts itself from water, nor how water is still left over. And Dr. Shannon makes contradictory terms in the combination of ideas mashed together one time. This is accomplished with a laser with millions of degrees. Another time he says it's frequencies of sound and soul luminescence. In one sense, the movie shows a bubbling container reminiscent of cold fusion, electronic cells, and other references that sustain fusion. The character of the film claims that a glass of water could power Chicago for weeks. But no clear explanation is ever given to how they're simply burning hydrogen, released by highly efficient means or any other through nuclear processes. Film is also misleading. The chain reaction is related to nuclear fission, not fission. So again, interesting idea, but maybe, you know, it's left in that sort of movie mold of, you know, maybe there is something there, maybe there's not. All right, so chain reaction, as we said, you know, obviously he's got some things going for it, something not. What we are going to look at it right now is obviously some of the people in the film and some that we know quite well, some that we don't. Was it Kevin Dunn, we know pretty well? Rachel Weisz, obviously, obviously married to Daniel Craig, fantastic in the Mummy series, and she's done a lot of work in that. Fred Ward, probably one of my favourites out of this time, the late great Fred Ward, and he, you know, he was always fantastic in the work that he did. He played obviously a lot of authoritative figures, obviously Tremors, such a great role in Tremors as well, and then of course, yes, the Man himself in the Destroyer series are fantastic. You know, series of novels, folks, if you ever get a chance to read them, they are top. I mean, they really are some of the greats. And really, it's bringing against, you know, martial arts, obviously, which is huge. And obviously, he plays Remo Williams. Name of the movie is Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. That was going to start a whole tribe of different movies based around, obviously, the character of Remo Williams, which is the Destroyer series. There's heaps. This was a one that was done in the was it the 1970s predominantly, and it's still being written today by different authors as well. He was also in Escape from Alcatraz in 79, Southern Comfort in 1981, which is a great one, folks, if you want to watch. It is a great action movie. Uncommon Valor, obviously played Gus Grissom in The Right Stuff as well. He's done, you know, so much different stuff. And obviously, you know, movies like Sweet Home Alabama, and of course, more recently, Armored in 2009. Great actor, and definitely one of the better ones that's had, you know, so much different variety over the years, and a tough character too. So, you know, again, some great stuff to look at. Fantastic. So, let's have a look at some trivia here, folks, on the movie. The actors could, you know, when it comes down to it, I think be interesting. You know, I think all up, so many different parts that Keanu Reeves and obviously the rest of the cast have done, and we're going to talk about some of that now. Eckers could do more than a couple of takes a day while shooting on the ice hovercraft chase boat because the unpleasant combination of cold air and high speed, they just couldn't do more. The drawbridge sequence where Keanu Reeves is being chased by the Chicago police and the FBI, Brian Cox's henchman took approximately 1 week of night shoots to film with temperatures ranging from 5 below to 20 below zero. Nick Offerman was cast to play Kenny's building super, but found out both of his scenes were cut out in the film's premiere. Would have been one of his first films. Filmed also exclusively in the winter of 1985 and early 96 in Chicago, the hometown of Andrew Davis, were his other films, Code of Silence, Above the Law, The Package, and The Fugitive. Prior to the start of filming, Keanu Reeves had injured himself playing a pickup game of hockey in his native Canada. Injured his neck and back areas, causing him to gain weight, and which explains his look in the film. The The scene in which Keanu barely escapes on the motorcycle was shot mainly with blue screens and explosion effects. The live sequences had Reeves riding a motorcycle hooked up to the back of a truck. Mira Sorvino was originally cast to play Lily, but she left to star in the movie Beautiful Girls. The massive explosion scene in the early part of the film was caused by the botched cold fusion project was shot with a miniatures, an old abandoned steel factory acting as both the interiors. Scenes filmed at the Ville Museum of Natural History of the Museum and Industry were both in Chicago. We're only 5 miles apart. Motorcycle in the movie is a 1976 Kawasaki, a KZ-1000, rented by Keanu. Fox bought 5 of the bikes and for different scenes, all painted in flat black to prevent spotlights from being reflected and rejected off it. The area of the particle accelerator at C-Systems Research is in Leesburg, Virginia. It's really APS, Advanced Photon Source, and that's in Argonne National Lab in Lemont, Illinois. The characters that Fred Ward and Kevin Dunn play in the film are loosely based on the characters U.S. Marshal Sam Gerard and Cosimo Refro, played by, of course, Tommy Lee Jones and Joe Pants from The Fugitive, which are also directed by the same director. The Inland Steel Plant in Champlain, East Chicago, was where the earlier scenes were shot. Rachel Weisz plays visiting science Dr. Lily Sinclair, physicist working in the U.S. under the H-1B visa, and is on the run from agents, the secret organization, who want her information to eliminate through. She played a near-identical role in The Bourne Legacy. Two of the computer readouts at the batch recipe readout are from On Deadly Ground. It's a Seagal movie. The Lyman Collier role was originally meant to be Tommy Lee Jones and was replaced by him as Brian Cox. Brian Cox recalls that despite having 8 writers working uncredited on it, much of this film was shot something called a beat script, which described the major beats but little else. So there's a scene here, obviously, that Brian Cox went through with Morgan Freeman. And he cited the scene where he says, Morgan Freeman hurried down a tunnel and get into an elevator with him with no dialogue written. Writer and of course the director, this Andrew Davis, asked two of them to improvise. Freeman, at this point, had been working on the film much longer than Cox, was fed up with the continuous rewrites, story changes. He refused. Cox hurriedly came up with a monologue when the camera unexpectedly follows them into the elevator and started singing. The scene was later reshot with scripted dialogue. Several references are made to an ice hovercraft. It's actually an airboat, such as one seen in the Everglades or the swampy regions, like in some of those, obviously, films with Chuck Norris, like Invasion USA. Keanu Reeves and Rachel Weisz share a scene where they're both clothed and she's in a bathtub. They'll later share a scene where Rachel Weisz is clothed and in a bathtub in Constantine. Yes, they work together on that one. The ramp Keanu Reeves runs down during the explosion is located at the Argonne National Laboratory. The lecture at the beginning of the movie was filmed in Mandel Hall. We've also got I'm Your Friend, Eddie, is the only line of dialogue in the film that originated from Josh Freeman's script, Dead Drop, which is the original. The water tanks used in the film to act as a cold fusion project are similar to those used in hydro and massage therapy as well. Paul Shannon and Morgan Freeman smokes Davidoff cigars throughout the film. It's not possible to tell whether they're Dominican-style or Cuban-made brand because the brands are identical. Morgan Freeman takes a cigar out of his cigar case during the FBI interview in his house, and it is a Civinelli three-finger Churchill length case in brown leather. Reunites Keanu Reeves and Fred Ward 8 years after they did The Prince of Pennsylvania in 1988. James Newton Howard was originally going to score the film, was unavailable due to scheduling the conflict of it. Some scenes were shot in the same location as Damien Omen 2. Right at the start of the film, during the speech held by Dr. Barkley, behind him is the Buckminster Fuller Diximation map. Public booth phone call just prior to the ice hovercraft chase was made from George Williams, the college camps. This is the only known film where Keanu Reeves punches his own helmet off. So lots of great stuff there, folks, when it comes to this movie. This movie is not the greatest movie in the world. It is a perfect 90s style thriller. It's, you know, again, it's a make-believe science to make it, you know, give it verisimilitude, all that sort of thing. Is it a great Keanu Reeves movie? Yeah, it's not too bad. This movie gets a 2.5 out of 5 on, of course, the Hallenbach scale here at the Little Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.